Hello and welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast, your source for school-based occupational therapy tips, interviews, and professional development. Now, to get the conversation started, here is your host, Jason Davies. Class is officially in session.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back for another amazing episode of the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Jason Davies. I'm a school-based occupational therapist in Southern California. And wherever you are today, I'm just excited that you're here right now listening to this podcast. Why? Because that means that you're a school-based OT practitioner that wants to be a better school-based OT practitioner, not just for yourself, but for the students that you serve, the teachers you work with, and the parents that you have the pleasure, I know sometimes it doesn't seem like a pleasure, but the pleasure of having IEP meetings with and helping them to support their child. So today we are here to talk about goals. Speaking of IEPs, right? We are talking about goals, and I am bringing on two very special guests to help us talk about goals. If you're an occupational therapist like myself or an occupational therapy assistant and you've helped your occupational therapist, trying to get my words right here, to help them create goals, or maybe you even create most of the goals yourselves, then like me, you have probably found yourself making some very interesting goals. Sometimes, you know, you make great goals. Other times, you look back on a goal that you created a year ago, and you're just like, what was I thinking, right? Well, today, we are going to advance on that, and we're going to talk about what makes a good goal within school-based occupational therapy. You know, within school-based OT, I like to say we are very niche within niche, yes, niche, within the world of pediatric occupational therapy. And goals within school-based OT are different from clinic-based goals. So today we are going to talk to Emily Deller and Sarah Bollier about how to create school-based occupational therapy goals that actually matter. Goals not only allow us to measure progress, but they also kind of drive our services and the accommodations that we recommend. So they absolutely are important when we are developing our goals within an IEP. So without any further ado, let me go ahead and welcome to the show Emily Deller and Sarah Bollier. You might better know them as Emily Marie OT and Sarah BOT on Instagram.
Hello, welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. How are you doing today, Sarah?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, so excited. And you said us because today we have two very special guests. We also have Emily. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, you know, to start off, why don't we start with a little fun question of how you both found your way to being a school OT? Emily, would you like to start us off on this one?
Sure. I honestly never thought that I would end up in the schools. Straight out of OT school, I worked in outpatient peds, and that was kind of my dream starting out of OT school, and figured out pretty quickly that that wasn't for me. A coworker just mentioned that her old job was looking for an OTR, so I jumped at the chance to start something new, and I fell in love.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, we never know where we're going to end up. I thought that by now in my career, I'd be owning like a pediatric clinic, and definitely don't own a pediatric clinic, but have the OT schoolhouse. So yeah, you know, we end up right where we belong. So absolutely, great way to find a school-based OT. And what about you, Sarah?
So I started in outpatient pediatrics as well. That was my first gig. And several months into that job, I got my foot in the door with a local school district covering a maternity leave. I came back later that summer to cover their ESY program. And then funny enough, they added on a full-time position in that district the following school year. So I applied and interviewed and ended up being full-time there ever since.
Gotcha. And you know, so this is interesting because I've always wondered this. I always thought I would go into a pediatric job before school-based OT, but you both did. And I'm wondering, how do you feel that having a pediatric clinic-based position, did that impact you as a school-based OT once you got there? Anyone want to jump off with that one?
Yeah, sure. I definitely think it made a positive difference because of the support that I had with other therapists around me. There was a lot more intervention learning and kind of like the beginning ropes of being an OT and in pediatrics that I got from working outpatient, whereas in the schools, you tend to be more isolated and you don't necessarily see the wealth of interventions and areas that we can address.
Yeah. And Sarah, you want to add anything else?
I kind of had the opposite experience because my pediatric, with the clinic setting, I was very much on my own. Oftentimes I might be the only therapist there at the clinic. So that really kind of taught me how to be more confident in my skill set and work independently and have that confidence to be able to relay what I know to the parents. But once I came into the school setting, it was a totally different world. Being able to be around all those other professionals was really awesome, getting to work alongside other therapists, speech therapists, PTs. So I really enjoyed that change in the school setting.
That's so interesting. I know, because I have often told therapists that it might be a good idea to start in a pediatric clinic because I have seen what Emily has seen. I have seen pediatric clinics where you are treating right next to a therapist. And maybe you're not like working with that therapist directly, but all of that rubs off onto you. You see what they're doing with the kid and you get ideas. And you're right, or at least in my experience, Emily, like you don't have that in the school-based OT. You're often on your own. You have three schools and they are your three schools or whatever it is. And you don't have someone and you might meet with them once a month to have an OT meeting, but you don't get that. But it's interesting to hear you kind of have the opposite effect, Sarah. Were you at like a very small clinic or why do you think that was?
Yeah, it was a really small clinic. It was mostly contracted therapists. You know, most of them were working part-time. It was a second job. They're working per diem or contracting out to different preschools. So a lot of people just coming and going and not as much of that 40-hour work week where you're working throughout the day with other therapists.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you know, it's always nice to hear differing stories because, you know, everyone out there, they're trying to figure out which way they want to go. So it's great to hear two different things. I assume that you guys were both going to say the same thing on that it started off, you know, a lot of community within the pediatric clinic and then you went to schools. But that's great to hear, Sarah, that, you know, it's not always the same route. So thank you. All right. So today we are here to talk about goals. So let's dive into it. First of all, let's set the scene. Why is talking about goal writing important for school-based OTs?
So goal writing is really an inevitable part of documentation for an OT, regardless of your setting, right? So it's how we track progress over time. It shows our skill and our need to be working with a student or a client. So what we found is that school-based OT goals are really uniquely written and they're not frequently addressed in OT school curriculums or not done in an extended period of time. So we're here to really share what we've learned over years of experience and feedback from others in our profession, as well as just our experiences in a bunch of different settings.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sarah, I want to let you continue on, but I also, as I'm thinking, how are they slightly different from a pediatric setting too, or a clinic setting, I should say?
Yeah, so it depends really on the areas that you can write goals for. So the main idea of writing school-based OT goals are for accessing your education. So we need to make sure that what we're addressing is really improving and enhancing the student's participation throughout the school day and in that educational curriculum. Whereas pediatrics and outpatient, you can really work on whatever the caregiver concern is or whatever you see as most fundamental at that time.
Gotcha. And Sarah, would you like to add anything?
Yeah. So as Emily mentioned, you know, OT goal writing, especially for school-based, is not something that's always well taught in OT programs. So it's difficult to know whether or not you're writing good goals, high quality goals. So going back to your point, why it's important to talk about this is that it's something that has to be developed over time. It really is a unique skill set, that documentation and goal writing. So talking it out with other experienced therapists can be really helpful in helping to grow that skill set, especially if you don't have good mentorship where you're currently at. So that's why we're here today, is to kind of share what we've learned over the years and hopefully help some newer therapists or therapists that are looking to improve their goal writing in their practice.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And, you know, one thing that I've realized is that schools, districts, they are very different. And so before we actually continue on, I want to give you both a second to actually share kind of what type of district are you in? Are you in a rural, small district? Are you in a entire county? Are you in a urban, large district? Where are you both currently practicing? So people know when they're listening to this, kind of where you're coming from. How about I will say, go ahead, Emily. I can go.
Yeah. So I have a unique position. So I'm within a school district in Delaware. However, it is, I believe it's the only publicly funded autism program, specific autism program in the US. So I work in two specialty programs, an autism program and a school for the deaf. So the goals and the programs and kind of the laws that we follow may be a little bit different and a little bit more unique than a typical just public school environment.
Gotcha. Okay. And what about you, Sarah?
I have somewhat of a unique position as well, in that I'm in a single school. I don't have to travel to multiple schools. I feel very lucky for that position. I do work in a rural school district. For those of you who don't know, I'm in Maine. So we have a smaller school district, and I'm just in a single school working with kids in K through three public school.
K through three, that's it?
Mm-hmm. We have a very large school. I think we have 12 different kindergarten classrooms in our school building. So it's quite large.
And you said this is kind of in a rural area, right?
Yes. No?
Okay. So how far away do kids, some of the kids have to travel to get to their school sites?
Or the school site? Could be up to like a 30, 45 minute bus ride. It depends.
Wow. Okay. So they're coming in from a little distance away. Wow. Okay. Very cool. All right. Back to our regularly scheduled goal writing. This, for anyone who has sat in more than like five IEPs, ARDs, whatever we want to call them across the United States, this might sound like a little bit of a loaded question, but I would love to hear your response. And that is, why are goals important for IEPs?
So when it comes down to it, it really is the legal process, and that's why they're required. So legally, goals are required to show what skills we are addressing in order to provide those direct services in a public school environment. And that public school environment is important because in private school environments, that could be different. They really also help us focus on what we were working towards so that we can establish a clear plan of care and how we want to get there. So when it comes to IEP documentation, goals show the need areas that the student has. And it is really the skills that they need to improve to, again, best access their education.
Got it. Great. And what about 504 plans or maybe RTI programs? Do you guys also write goals for those types of programs, or what's your experience with that?
So what we found that most common answer is no. Most OTs are not writing goals for 504s or RTI programs, but of course it depends everywhere you go. Typically with 504 plans, you're really focused on providing those appropriate accommodations. So you wouldn't be writing any goals for that. Of course, there's rare occasions where you might be providing short-term direct services on a 504. I know some OTs have many students on a 504. Again, that varies by state, but in my experience, we don't write goals for students who are accessing services on a 504 plan. When it comes to RTI, you know, similarly, you're really focused on providing general accommodations, strategies, or interventions that aren't student specific. So you wouldn't be tracking individual student progress for that.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially with RTI. You know, I like to provide practitioners with this advice. I like to think of RTI as writing more goals for a classroom, as opposed to an IEP as goals for an individual student. So I might create a quote unquote goal for their classroom for all the students in that classroom. But yeah, typically we're not writing too many goals for individual students, of course.
I think that's a great way to really keep your RTI programming focused on what you want to achieve, but also keeping it broader for the whole class.
Yeah.
Another thing that's come up too is the debacle of whether or not you're writing goals for OT consult. I don't know about you, but in my district, we do have to write goals for OT consult. And in polling our audiences, a majority do not. So do you guys have to write goals for consult?
It has changed over the years. I have fought this a lot in my school districts. Personally, I am one to like, I am one to speak up when it comes to, you know, meeting with my directors and whatnot. And we've gone back and forth with this. You know, I've worked in three different districts and it keeps going back and forth as to whether or not we need a goal. My preference, I guess you would call it, is that no, it should not be an OT goal. It should be a teacher goal. And we are consulting with the teacher to help the teacher help the student make that goal. That's my opinion. However, sometimes I'm one to ask for forgiveness as opposed to permission. So I might not always do exactly what my director wants. So, you know, it is what it is. But I do know that throughout the United States, it does change. And you already touched upon this once. Like, the reason that one district might do it and another district might not comes down oftentimes to the legality and what their state is saying, because maybe the state has been sued for not having a goal on a consult. And it's unfortunate that that tends to be a reasoning. But yeah, I don't know. Do you want to add anything about that?
I've definitely had my share of experiences with that and the legality being questioned and things like that. But yeah, I completely agree in terms of the consult, where working more collaboratively in other goals on the IEP can be more beneficial than just writing an OT goal as a consult.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with the no, I'm on the no consult goal team as well. And for me, I feel that when I have to write a goal for consultation, it really kind of boxes me into what I'm consulting about and having to track and measure, where oftentimes the kid that we have on consult may have a variety of different needs and it's fluid throughout the school year. There may be different needs that are coming up throughout the year, not just tied to one specific area. So if I had the choice, I would also say no goals for OT consult to give us more flexibility in what we're addressing if we are in a district that's writing separate OT discipline specific goals.
Yeah. You know what? Sorry, this is completely off the cuff, but have you ever had to have a tough conversation with someone above you or maybe someone within the IEP team about this? How come OT should not be writing a goal for a student on consult? Have you ever had that conversation with someone?
I have, in terms of pushing what they call a written expression goal. So a lot of times I find that the schools and the programs I'm working in don't necessarily have handwriting programs, but they're assuming that the OT will teach handwriting. So that's where I come in and we'll put my foot down and have, in terms of talking to case managers about, this skill has not been taught. So I'm not teaching it. I'm here to provide remediation on that. And I think that's one good like advocacy step too, in terms of getting away from handwriting therapists.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I do think that OTs need to push back just a little bit. You know, we need to know what we are personally great at and what we can do and what we can support a student. But we also need to know, in the opposite side, what we shouldn't be doing, what we are not able to do. And, you know, it's hard to say give a student OT when they haven't had that initial training on handwriting first, for just to go with the handwriting example. And in that sense, it might be better off to provide that consult to a teacher, how they can support the students, especially, you know, at the younger grade levels, before going down the remediation route and creating your own specific OT goal. So, yeah. All right, Emily, you touched upon this a little bit earlier when we talked about goals within and outside of the public schools, or within or outside schools, I should say. But is there a quote-unquote lane that we should stay within as a school-based OT when it comes to goal writing?
So we'd like to say no, that there's no lane that we should stay in, so long as we're practicing within our scope, right? Yeah. But logistically, we can't possibly cover every single area in our scope for every single student. We can address anything within our scope, from ADLs to executive functioning. We definitely do not have to stick to just fine motor, being fine motor therapists, which we're often known for. But what's great about working within a team is that there's often other skilled professionals that can address any common areas of overlap. So for example, while we are skilled in addressing social skills and emotional regulation, there might be a speech therapist who's working on social pragmatics, or a counselor or social worker who's taking on that emotional regulation piece. So while we can pursue anything within our scope, it might not always be the best use of our skill set if there's other professionals that can kind of take on some of that role. And of course, we can still also work collaboratively with them to share our experience when it comes to those areas too.
I love that answer, Sarah. That's great. Like, just because we can do it doesn't mean we are the best at doing it. So I really like that. Emily, did you want to add anything to that quote unquote lane of goal writing?
Sure. Yeah. So we really do encourage OTs to think outside of that fine motor, that handwriting box that we had just talked about, because we are so much more than that and have so much more value. But there is the reality of it that we do need to work within what the special education coordinator or the case manager approves in the IEP. So if you are feeling quote unquote boxed in, you can work to expand your role as an OT over time. So maybe you are just doing fine motor goals now, but really advocate and address for the other important areas with those higher ups in the school district or within your own team, so that you can start to work on some of those in the future.
Absolutely. So, you know, I've been a school-based OT for several years now. I know both of you have as well, and I'm sure you, just like I, have created many great goals and also maybe some not so great goals, right? You look at it a year later and you're like, wow, what was I thinking? But we all need like a system to help us remember what makes a great goal. There's a lot of acronyms for goal writing. You have SMART goals. Some people subscribe to the DUMB goals, D-U-M-B goals. Do you use any particular acronym? Do you use SMART or do you use something else?
Sure. So when we're teaching about goal writing, we specifically speak to SMART goals, which for listeners who may not know, stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time bound. And we use that SMART goal framework to make sure that we're really including all of the information necessary in order to make that goal client-centered and measurable. So the way that we write the goal word for word can depend on the district, the program that we're using, the electronic documentation system or IAP program. So it may not look exactly like that SOAP note format that we were taught in OT school or SMART goal format. But as long as we're keeping that framework in mind, we can be confident that we're including everything we need in order to make that goal high quality and measurable.
Absolutely. And I know you both actually collaborate together to actually provide a training for therapists on goal writing, specifically in the schools. And so I really want to hear your answer to this. So we're going to expand upon it a little bit. So I want to know, what do you both consider some of those key components? You mentioned the SMART wording, but what are the key components to a solid goal?
So there's really three different areas that we focus on. The first being client-centered. So is it important to the student? Is it needed to improve access to their education? Are you addressing the student's strengths and their individual way of learning? That's something that's very key to making a goal that is going to be attainable, but also be motivating for the student. The second one is being functional. So in schools, focusing on accessing the educational curriculum. And now that also means that your educational curriculum could be life skills based. It's whatever that student is accessing. It's not just looking at math, science, spelling, ELA. It can really expand to what is that individual curriculum for that student, but also making it functional in terms of working on occupation-based skills. So this also brings up the difference between outpatient peds and school-based. So we are looking more at what is the skill, what is that end goal, rather than looking at the component parts. So instead of a in-hand manipulation goal, we're going to put that towards a functional task and that be our measure. And then the third, that's really a key component for a solid goal, is being measurable. And it's, can you take data on the goal so that you're actually getting the information that you want or need? There's a lot of times we write goals and then we go to progress monitoring time and it's like, crap, I was looking at attention when I wanted to look at the real skill and you yeah. don't know where to go with that information. So being measurable is extremely important.
Yeah. And you know, let's dive into that measurable a little bit more. How do you go about ensuring that a goal is measurable?
One of the most important things is to make sure that you're keeping the language and the goal really objective. You don't want to leave it open to interpretation. So when we're teaching others about goal writing, we really emphasize what we call the stranger test. So a stranger should be able to read your goal and know exactly how to implement that goal. They should really have a clear understanding of what you're trying to target and how you're going to measure that goal. And I think this is really especially important when you're working in a collaboration with a CODA who may be implementing those goals and measuring them, or if the student were to move out of district, you want to make sure that their new therapist would share that same understanding of how the goal should be measured. And by using that objective, straightforward language, you can help promote that. And another way is to just make sure that you have a plan on how you're going to collect that data before you add that goal to the IEP. So you should have a really clear plan forward of how you see yourself measuring that progress, whether it's with a plus and minus chart, using graphing, activity analysis sheets. Those things help ensure that you're able to show meaningful progress over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Going a little bit even further on that, do you, Sarah, will you have either a paraprofessional or even a teacher at any time help you with measuring goals?
Absolutely. Especially when it comes to working with the self-contained teachers and the self-contained program, we do a lot of shared collaboration on ADL type goals. So we usually will develop an activity analysis chart, something really quick and easy for them in order to track that progress. And we discuss it on how it's going to be implemented and tracked by the paraprofessional or the teacher in that classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. I do the same exact thing too. And I think as long as we as professionals, A, treat them like professionals and, you know, provide them with the training that they need in order to do whatever we are asking them to do, I think that is completely fair. I also think that if we're going to work with a paraprofessional, we need to be working with that teacher very closely as well, because we don't want to overstep the teacher's directives to that paraprofessional or whatever it might be. And so we might want to go through the teacher to get to the paraprofessional as opposed to going directly to that paraprofessional. I don't know. Have you found anything that works really well?
I think that using that collaborative team approach is really important. So maybe talking to the paraprofessional and the teacher at the same time, because I feel like a lot of times there is a power imbalance or can be a perceived power imbalance, and we don't want to make it that way. We know how important those paraprofessionals are in the classroom to help our students succeed. So talking as to the group or to the educational team as a whole to address, this is how I want to take the data, here's how you can present the goal and what else, is a good way to go about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we already established that Emily, you're in Delaware. Sarah, you're in Maine, correct? All right.
Yes.
You're far apart, but you're both on the East Coast, Northeast. Do you find that your goals look similar, or do they actually look different because you're in different parts of the country?
I think just the nature of the different roles that we're in, the different school settings, they can vary quite a bit. Emily writes a lot of life skills-based goals, whereas I do not, where I'm working with those younger students. But definitely the formatting varies. I believe, Emily, you have a shared goal bank that all of the contracted therapists use together, whereas we don't have that consistent formatting. We're able to write our goals in whatever formatting that we like.
Yeah. Emily, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, we found this as a company to be extremely confusing as we were working across the program, and everyone had their own kind of way of writing goals. And then the students would either switch placements or would come back on what we call on-site, and they would just move around a lot, and we wouldn't know what the goal meant or how to track it. So we came up with a company-wide way of how we're writing goals and a goal bank to pick from, and then to modify to make client-centered or student-centered to just be the best for us. But it's also a small company, so we know that that's not very doable in large districts.
Yeah, you know, I have, over the years, I've had access to goal banks, and sometimes they've been, you know, on Google Sheets, sometimes they've been within the IEP program itself, and I've never fully implemented, like, the use of it. It's just, it takes a while to put together a system to use a goal bank, and sometimes it's just easier to write a goal off the cuff. Like, you know what you want to work on, and you just want to write it. But I'm sure, you know, it is nice to have that goal bank to potentially refer back to and just see, you know, are other OTs writing goals kind of similar to this and going back to that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. All right. This is a question that I love to ask all guests, but specifically in relationship to the topic that we're talking about. And that's a little bit about research. You know, is there research out there related to best practice for goal writing? You know, I personally have never seen a research article like titled Occupational Therapy Goal Writing in Schools. But I want to ask you, do you know of any research related to goal writing in schools?
So what we're hearing from our national therapy associations is that collaborative goal writing really is best practice. And recently, AOTA, APTA, and ASHA put out a joint statement on interprofessional collaborative goals in school-based practice. And in that joint statement, they really conclude that collaboration increases understanding of different team member roles, and it really helps to enhance student outcomes. And they help to outline a general process on how therapists can move towards that collaborative model in goal writing.
Absolutely. And Emily, what about you? Do you have anything else beyond the collaborative goal writing that you like to do as best practice?
So AOTA does have a book out there called Best Practices for Occupational Therapy in Schools that includes the best practice areas for goal writing, but not necessarily anything too specific. There is some new research that's coming out in terms of strength-based goals. So strength-based goals are really respecting a student's independence, autonomy, and preferences within goal writing by looking at what the student can do. It's another way to be client-centered and to make sure that the goal is specifically written for an individual, harnessing their strengths to learn a new skill.
Great. Yeah, I think that absolutely is the way that we are going with goal writing, keeping it strengths-based, especially in the schools. I think that's a great way to go about it. Speaking of that a little bit, because this kind of ties into the type of goals is often tied into the number of goals that we have. Mm-hmm. And so how do you go about determining, in a way, how many goals you want to write for a student? Is there a specific number that you aim for, a specific number that you want to stay under? Is it completely irrelevant how many numbers, number of goals? What are your thoughts on that?
So for me, we're writing OT-specific goals in my district. I know that not everybody does, but so keeping that in mind, really less is more. You want to aim for maybe 2 to 4 goals total. You don't need to write a goal for every single skill that you're working on in therapy, because if we did that, we'd spend more time collecting data than we would on developing those skills. So when I'm writing my OT specific goals for my students, I really try to shoot for that lower range and just making sure we're narrowing it down to the most impactful areas for that student and choosing to measure those and track those over the IEP year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and while we're on this topic, because, you know, we might recommend, let's say we recommend 2 goals, but then a parent comes in or an advocate comes in and they say, I want a different goal. How might you respond to that? If, you know, you've already decided on kind of these 2 goals, how might you respond to that?
So if it happens at an IEP meeting, the first thing that I always say is I'll have to collect baseline data and get back to you on that. We don't want to just write down a goal willy-nilly and not have any kind of data to see what the student actually does. We know a lot of times the skills that are presented at home are different than in school. So always keep that in mind. And the IEP can always be amended at a later date, although case managers don't always love that. They'll do. But if it is a concern that's brought up prior to an IEP meeting or in the planning of that, you can definitely ask about specific areas of need that a parent has that they would like addressed. So really start that conversation early on to see what are their concerns and how can you address it. It also comes in terms of the advocacy of just more goals don't always mean more progress, and that the skills that we're addressing within one goal probably already are relating to their area of need that they have. So those are just some different ways to go about that. The third way that you could is, and this is very dependent on state and programming, is adding in the parents' areas of concern in your OT need in the accommodations and modifications. So for example, in my electronic programming, I can write, in addition to the following goals, OT services will address X, Y, and Z through direct and consultative services, but not have a specific goal attached to those. So if that's, it's a possibility in some districts.
Yeah. And you know, we always have those supplemental aids, modifications, accommodations. And I think as OTs, we need to learn to use those a little bit better. It is less restrictive to use an accommodation than it is to provide direct therapy services. And so we need to learn to use those accommodations, especially a little bit more. So thanks for that. I love that answer, by the way, that you said it's okay to say, hey, I need more time. Oftentimes we get caught up in IEP meeting and we want to just like give the right answer. And I think it's perfectly okay to say, I hear you, I understand, but I don't have the data that we need right now to move forward with this. I would love to, you know, see the student over the next 2 weeks and then get back to you. I think that's perfectly fine to say. So, yeah.
Exactly.
I don't want to go forward because I kind of cut you off in a way, Emily, because I didn't give you an opportunity to talk about the number of goals. It sounds like you use a more collaborative approach potentially within your program. So does that alter the amount of goals that you potentially have as a therapist?
So when Sarah and I had discussed this in the past many times, I think she writes too many goals, having 4, and I usually stick to 1 or 2, but that's just differences in our programming, right? So while I'm still writing related service specific goals,
okay,
I have a more collaborative environment where we have team meetings every week where the whole entire educational team is there to discuss, this is how we want to address the goal. Here are the supports to put in place. So we don't need as many goals because it is such a transdisciplinary environment already.
All right. So Emily, we're all going to need to know what district or school you work for so that when an opening, we can jump in on that. Right? Weekly collaborative meetings. What is that? All right. Here in California, and I know it's fairly common across the country now, for every long-term yearly goal, we often have to break that down into progress monitoring types of goals, like maybe 2 to 3 short-term objectives. Do you do that? And if so, what does that look like?
Yeah. So at my school, all of the related service providers do write short-term goals, or what we call also objectives, and the formatting of those can vary. So for example, you might have a single long-term goal and a single objective under that, or you could have a single long-term goal and multiple short-term goals under that, that are maybe time-based per quarter, per trimester. It really varies. We don't have one consistent way in which we write those, but we are required to write those short-term goals and objectives.
And so gotcha. I've actually found that it's through coaching that that's not the norm. I talk to people in a lot of different states, and many districts only write long-term goals. So that leaves it up to the therapist to then break that up into the benchmarks so that they're taking data to show progress over time and they actually can see it. Because otherwise it comes to IEP time and they may not have made progress, or they're just then looking at that progress reporting.
Wow. Yeah. In California, it used to be really, when I first started back in 2012, it was really, we only had to write short-term objectives for students that had more severe disabilities, that they were in a more severe program. Those types of students that needed more support, for some reason, legally and from the state, we had to write objectives for those kids. However, over the last 10 years, it has really just kind of caught on that we just need to do that for every student. So that's kind of how it shifted over here in the last 10 years. But yeah, that's interesting to hear that that's not the norm. So, wow.
I think that's what makes it so difficult to learn how to write proper goals, because it changes so much from district to district. There's no one gold standard on whether or not you're writing short-term goals, how you're going to format those goals. So it makes it really difficult, especially for new grads, to really grow that skill set and really understand if they're doing what's right by the student and what's best practice.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always tell people that I think it's very unique that in the schools, we write a goal for 12 months. Like 12 months is a really, really long time, especially for a student. And actually, since you both have kind of worked in that pediatric clinic setting outside the schools, or whether it's home or clinic, whatever it might be, really quickly, when you write goals there, what time frame are you talking for a goal?
When I was an outpatient, we were writing them quarterly.
So 3 months kind of is what the time frame was for each goal?
Yep.
Emily?
Yeah, mine was 3 months, or insurance-based. So we would know how many visits they get before insurance runs out and do it that way.
So if they have 10 sessions for insurance, then you're writing a goal for 10 weeks or 5 weeks if they're twice a week, something like that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So we're talking at most 12 weeks. And in the schools, we're talking a school year is like 40 weeks or something like that, 35 weeks, something like that. So very big difference from being a pediatric outpatient or out whatever clinic versus in the schools. Yeah, it's pretty crazy that we write a goal for 12 months because so much can change in that amount of time. Yeah. All right. Moving forward. Still talking about goals, of course. Can goals be changed either at an IEP or maybe even halfway through the year once you put a goal in place at the annual IEP and maybe you see changes? Can you make changes to goals halfway through the year?
Absolutely. You know, at minimum, we should be updating them annually. And sometimes we'll update them at a triennial, a 3-year eval meeting as well, if that falls in between each of their annual meetings. If you're finding that as you're progressing throughout the year, several months go by and they're really not making progress toward those goals, or you're finding that it's really not an appropriate goal for them for whatever reason, you can absolutely call a meeting to have that amendment. Sometimes I've come across IEPs where the students' goals have remained the same for multiple years, which absolutely should not be happening. If they're not meeting those annual goals, we need to really reflect on their plan and our approaches and make the appropriate changes so that we're able to make those goals more attainable and realistic for the student. And I know, and speaking with Emily, you know, where they work so collaboratively and they have that those weekly occurrences of meetings, I think, Emily, you guys even maybe update them more frequently than annually as well.
Yeah. So it, remember, the parents and caregivers can call IEP meetings at any time. So just because they have the annual doesn't mean that they aren't going to call a meeting with a new concern or want things updated. And so can the educational team. But some states also have requirements when goals aren't meeting those objectives or those benchmarks, when they have to be revised. So, for example, there's a district, my district works so that if a student isn't making progress in two consecutive marking periods or benchmarks, it's required to have a revision to address it. So some states also have additional laws to make sure that they're not going an entire year without making progress.
Absolutely. And that is kind of where we're at here in California. Like, they want to see progress, and grades are really based upon progress on goals as opposed to their grades within the classroom a little bit for the self-contained classrooms. And so you were talking about, Emily, how you kind of write goals that are related service specific, but you really work in this collaborative team. If there's someone out there listening, what might be a tip for starting on the route toward being more collaborative, primarily with goals, but in general, more collaborative?
Yeah, so Sarah actually has more experience than I do in terms of writing the collaborative goals, because I'm already in that collaborative environment. It's not necessarily something that I've stepped my feet in. So Sarah, I'll let you speak to that.
Sure. So as I mentioned, we in my district have been writing separate related service provider goals for quite a while. So making that shift is really quite difficult. You know, everybody has their established roles and systems and the way that they do things. So my recommendation would be to really just start small. And that's what I've done just this past year. I started in working more closely with the self-contained classroom, developing collaborative ADL goals. That's really a really great starting point, I would say, because you really do work so closely with them. You know, oftentimes it's a special education teacher who's writing those dressing goals or toileting goals, but we have such skill and expertise in those areas. So I've tagged on what we call, quote unquote, tagging on to those special education goals, where typically I might write a separate dressing goal, as is the norm. I've also worked with a resource room teacher on an executive functioning based goal for a student who really that was their biggest area of need. So I think just starting small, starting with maybe a teacher that you're close to who would be open to that collaboration. Yeah, trying to do it just a little bit at a time, not trying to all of a sudden, okay, next year, all of my students are going to have just 100% collaborative goals.
Right.
I'm going to be supporting all of the classroom goals, just really starting small and making that gradual shift towards that collaborative model.
All right. And Sarah, as you're making that shift, what are you trying to include in that goal to make sure that it is a collaborative goal?
I think it's important, in order for it to truly be collaborative, you really need input from both of the professionals who are going to be working on it. So making a point to meet with them ahead of time to really talk about how that's going to be written and making sure that you have a plan on how you're both going to contribute to working towards that goal, what unique skills you're going to be bringing to the table in order to help them achieve that goal, as well as having a plan and order to track that progress on the goal. You don't want to come to progress note time and say, oh, I thought you were writing the summary. Oh, wait, I was supposed to write the summary. So making sure you're really figuring that all out up front before you get into that situation, because that definitely would not be a fun time.
100%. The last thing you want to do is show up to an IEP and blame each other on who's supposed to have the progress report. Absolutely. Do you find that your actual written goal looks very similar, whether it's collaborative or related service specific, or do you find that they actually look pretty different?
So in just my limited experience so far, where I have been working so much on goal writing, I have sort of taken charge on the formatting of the goal. And I run it by the teacher and I ask, does this sound in alignment with what you were thinking? Does this sound okay? So I've kind of taken that on, and the goal itself doesn't look much different than how I would write it as my own OT focus goal, it really does look quite similar. So for an ADL goal around hand washing, it's broken down by following that activity analysis. I wouldn't necessarily write it any differently.
Great, great. And do you either put in the goal or somewhere? I know every IEP looks different and they have like different spots for you to input different things. Do you write within the IEP who is going to be accountable for measuring the progress?
Sure. So on our IEP documentation system, they can add under each goal a responsible person. So I am listed as a responsible person under those goals that are shared.
Gotcha. But do you go even further to like say the OT will be the one to measure this goal or the teacher will be the one to measure this goal? Or do you guys just do that behind the scenes?
It's more so behind the scenes, just in my experience so far. Again, it's something new that we're trying to navigate. And
yeah.
You know, I think that could come back if you're in a large district, and you could come back to bite you if you don't have it specifically laid out there who's responsible. So I don't think that's a bad thing to make sure that it's really clear in the documentation.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. This is totally off the cuff again. I love that you guys are taking my off the cuff questions. Thank you. Back in the day, because you mentioned those responsible people, right? You write a goal and then you like click a checkbox on next to the OT, next to the teacher who's responsible. So my first question is there an option for a parent to be on that checklist for a responsible party for a goal?
That's a great question. I actually am not sure if that's possible in our system.
Yeah. So I remember back in the day, back in 2012, when I first started, that was an option. We could actually put a parent as a responsible party. Now, we never did. I remember hearing that there was only like one time that the district ever did that when I was brand new, and it was for a goal, an attendance goal. And so they actually did put the parent as a responsible party. But it sounds like neither of you have probably ever done that, right? Where a parent is a quote unquote responsible party for a goal in addition to other related service providers, or have you?
I have so many like problem scenarios that are going through my head right now if I were to make a parent responsible for a goal. So I personally would never do it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's why it doesn't happen, right? Yeah, it's we are the specialists. We are the ones responsible for the goals. And that's what I kind of figured the answer from both of you would be. It's like, no, we haven't done that. But, you know, you never know. So I figured I might ask. So, all right. Now, I think both of you are working with the younger kiddos, but no, Emily, you're working with older kiddos too?
K to 21.
Oh, wow. All right. Awesome. Perfect. So, then my question here is, do high school goals, elementary goals, maybe even transition age goals, the 18 to 21 year old kids or young adults, I should call them, do all these goals primarily look the same, or do you see a big difference between obviously the tasks that we're demanding, they're asking of them is going to be different, but do the goals look similar in the way that they're formatted and overall?
Possibly. It's always that it depends answer, right? So it really just depends on the student's programming and the student's needs. So in terms of the skills that are addressed, like, yes, you can have a high school student that's working on life skills. You can also have an elementary student who's working on that same skill. In terms of how they're formatted, they're not necessarily different other than the scenario that it might be done in could be different. So like, whereas a lot of times it's during structured therapy sessions or within the classroom setting, some of the older students might have within the community or on a job site as more of their area or where this skill is being measured. But because it's so specific to a student's need and because you're making a goal measurable and individual to that student, the format ends up being the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so much fun working with the high schoolers and the transition age students because of that, what you just mentioned. You could write a goal for something that happens at the grocery market, or you could write a goal for something that happens out on the quad where they're all eating lunch. Like, you don't get to do those types of things often, at least not often with the elementary kids, because it really is based upon that classroom. So yeah, that's a lot of fun when you get to the high school kids and you can do something like that. Sarah, have you actually worked with older kids or? Not yet.
Not in an OT capacity. My background is in being a BHP, a behavioral health professional, working with teenagers, adolescents, and adults with developmental disabilities, but not within the school-based OT practice setting.
Gotcha. Very cool. That's it's always fun to hear what background people have too, because it influences, you know, our practice today as occupational therapy practitioners. So very
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. I want to play a little game with you all. Maybe I did it one time before on an episode, but it's going to be like a quick response game. But I have one more question before we get to that. So what might you say to a parent who is asking for more goals at an IEP? Earlier, I asked you, maybe a parent wants a different goal. But again, kind of you get to that IEP meeting, and this happens frequently for OT practitioners. They want more goals. How might you respond?
I think a lot of it we have mentioned in terms of less is more in goal writings, that we can address a skill and it carry over to another area of need. Again, saying that we need baseline data, we need to stop, but also really the fact that we can address multiple areas, multiple skill needs with outside of the goals. So the interventions that we choose, and advocating this to a parent, our interventions aren't necessarily guiding the amount of goals, just the quality of what we're doing as therapists. So just because we had a different goal doesn't mean that the student is going to get more services. It also doesn't mean that they're going to make more progress.
Absolutely. And Sarah, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that?
No, I think Emily laid it out beautifully. I think that really emphasizing that just because we're adding more goals doesn't mean they're going to get more dedicated therapy time each week, because we want what's least restrictive. And adding so many goals doesn't improve their progress towards those goals. I think about like my personal life, my personal goal setting. If I had so many different personal goals that I'm trying to strive towards within the year, I'm not necessarily going to be able to accomplish all of those goals. Whereas on the flip side, if I really narrowed it down to what's most important, my chances of meeting those goals would be higher. So I know that necessarily won't translate to the parent in an IEP meeting, but just really trying to explain that more is not always better.
Yeah, 100% agree. All right. So we're going to play a game here. This is going to be a quote unquote quick response. We'll try to make it quick. Who knows? Maybe it won't be as quick, but I'm going to ask you several questions I have here, and yeah, we'll just see how this goes. This first one, I'm actually going to trick you a little bit. How far in advance of an IEP should you have the goals written?
Should or do?
Should.
You should have them as far enough in advance that allows everybody else on the team, including the parents, time to be able to review those. So I'd shoot for at least a week. I know in my district, we have a minimum of 3 days. I always like to do it before then. I typically start the goal writing process several weeks in advance of the IEP, just so I have enough time to collect that baseline data. But I don't typically have them like fully formatted and written until we're a bit closer to the IEP.
Yeah. So Sarah's answer is about a week is like the should. What about you, Emily? What is the should date?
Ooh, well, that scares me. We have to send IEPs home in draft form 5 days before the meeting, at least. But I like to have at least 3 sessions of data prior for the baseline to be written. So you should have it at least 2 to 3 weeks out of the IEP written.
All right. So 1 week for Sarah, 2 to 3 weeks for Emily. And now is the what do you actually get done? When does it actually happen for you?
The night before it's due.
Right.
I plead the fifth.
All right. I'll let that one slide this time.
What about you, Jason?
Oh, gosh. I'm the same way, right? You aim for usually I aim for about a week before, but oftentimes it could be a few minutes before walking into the IEP. Yeah. All right. So next question. What is your Instagram handle? We'll start with Emily.
My Instagram is EmilyMarie_OT.
All right. Be sure to follow Emily and Sarah.
Mine is Sarah B-O-T, B-E-E, like the bumblebee.
Absolutely.
Oh, and I should mention that Sarah with an H.
S-A-R-A-H, right?
Got it.
All right. A fun one here. Think about the future and finish the blank. One day I will likely write a goal for a student to What?
Shave facial hair.
All right. All right. Very functional.
Yeah. Not something I've written yet, but I feel it coming with a few of my students as they're getting a little older.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. And what about you, Sarah?
So I've worked a lot with students who use AAC devices. So I could see myself one day writing a goal that one day the student will be able to access their AAC device. I see that as a collaborative goal with a speech therapist.
Absolutely. It always should be collaborative whenever you're talking about AAC, in my opinion. Yeah. Personally, for me, when I wrote this question, I was thinking about the one thing that I always kind of joke about in IEPs, but I think one day it will happen. And that is access to social media for a student, making sure that they have access to social media. Because, I mean, right now, my little cousin, she's 12 and she's in the other room. And oh, my gosh, all she is doing is on her phone. I mean, I'm on my phone a lot, but my goodness. Yeah. So I think social media might be one thing that I might do one day in the future.
That's a cool one.
Yep. Yeah. All right. If we see you at a conference, what color pen are you using, Sarah?
Probably black. Classic.
All right. And what color is the actual pen? Is it black or is it like a cute pen?
Black
or
ink. What?
No, but the actual, like the style of pen. Are you using a Bic pen? Or are you using
I don't know. It's been so long since I've been at an in-person conference. I'm so used to typing notes on Google Docs.
All right. So an Apple pen, an Apple pencil is probably her answer for that. All right. What about you, Emily?
I'm a colored girl. I like purple or green usually is my colored choice.
I could tell with the notes that you added to our Google Doc. They're all purple. Love it. All right. All right. So we got some flair with Emily and we got some classic black with Sarah. What do you prefer, collaborative goals or service specific goals? What do you prefer?
So I prefer collaborative. I do find that transdisciplinary approach is the most effective for skill acquisition and progress. I mean, while I'm still using service specific goals, those meetings that we have really allow us to be collaborative.
And what about you, Sarah?
For me, since it's all that I'm used to, I'm really most comfortable with OT-specific goals. But as I've sort of dove into it this year, I've really come to enjoy writing those collaborative goals. And I definitely see that moving forward as something that I prefer overall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love it. All right. This is a fun one. And when I say fun, it's like I really look forward to your answer on this. Should students help write their own goals? Emily.
Yes. Yes, of course. If they're able, definitely. We need to be writing client-centered goals. It's really crucial to our practice and the student's progress. If they're not writing their own goals, then we need to make sure that it's addressing what's important and motivating to the student.
And Sarah, I assume you agree or no?
Definitely. In my experience at the elementary level, our students aren't usually involved in the goal writing process, but I think it's still really important that we connect them to those goals in therapy and make sure that they understand what they're working on and why that it's important and making sure that it's meaningful to them as well.
All right. This is my favorite part of the game. It's my game. I get to create the rules and change the rules. At what age might you consider having a student to really help out with that goal writing?
Gosh, I don't think it could really necessarily be defined just by age. I think it's important to also consider their cognitive capacity as well, and how aware they are of their therapy goals. But I mean, I could see potentially some of my later elementary students being included in that process.
Yeah. What about you, Emily?
Yeah, I've done it with as early as third grade.
Okay. Very cool. I like that answer. All right. Final question. What is the most unique goal you have ever written as a school-based occupational therapy practitioner? Who wants to start with this one? Go for it, Emily.
All right. So I do work at a school for the deaf, which is unique. So I get to write goals that are specific to addressing hand shapes for ASL.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. What about you, Sarah?
So I recently wrote a goal around Brailler use for a student who has visual impairment, working on finger isolation and strength in order to activate the keys on their Brailler. And that's been definitely the most unique one I've written so far.
That's very cool. I love that. I have never worked with a student using a Brailler, but that would be interesting. My wife had a student in her classroom who used a Brailler, and I was a little shocked and let down by how few services that student had for him. This was in a public school setting. Mm. And I was like, He had someone who was helping him learn the Brailler, but I thought he needed more. But, you know, I wasn't the OT at the school, so yeah, not my place.
Yeah, it's been really, really fun thing to work on.
Very cool. All right, before I let you go, what resources are out there for school-based OTs to improve their goal writing?
Sure. So Sarah and I do have a school-based OT goal writing workshop, and it's unique because we do work on the goals with you in the moment, review case studies, and really ask for that active participation. So you're getting a lot of feedback instead of just kind of like watching a video. There are some books out there as well. There is the Documenting Occupational Therapy Practice by Karen Sames that really discusses goal writing vocabulary formatting, but in a general sense, not necessarily specific to school-based practice. And then there is an AOTA book called Documenting Occupational Therapy Services in Schools, but neither of us have necessarily looked at that. That's one of the new offerings for AOTA.
Yeah, I just seen an email come out with that book being released. So interesting. All right. And actually, I want to go a little bit deeper. You mentioned your course. Your course, it's cohort-based, right? It's not like a self-paced online course where anyone can sign up anytime. You guys have made the decision, or you ladies, I should say, have made the decision to really hone in on having that collaborative experience with everyone who's taking the course. So how many, is it like weeks or is it, what does that look like?
So our goal writing course is really in the format of a live workshop, and we only launch it a few select times per year. And we limit the number of people that attend it because we want to be able to give that in the moment feedback to people who are working on crafting their goal writing. So that's formatted in a single live workshop at the moment where they come and we go through a presentation that dives much deeper into the how to write and format successful, measurable school-based OT goals. And then it's followed by a workshop that gradually gets a little bit more involved as we go through on building that skill set even further. Anything you want to add to that, Emily?
No, we really definitely put an emphasis on that workshop component where it is going through case studies, going through questions, working you from ABC answers to crafting your own goals and submitting them. It's a very friendly and non-intrusive environment. We're not there to judge anyone's goals. I mean, we have written our own awful goals in the past. So it's really there to be a service for those who don't necessarily have access to those mentors out there or other resources for school-based goal writing.
Absolutely. And where's the easiest place for people to learn about the goal writing workshop?
Sure. So you can go to emilymarieot.com/goals. And we have a waitlist there. So everyone on the waitlist will be the first ones to know when we are launching next.
Great. And we will be sure to, sorry, real quick, Sarah, we'll put that in the show notes so everyone can find that. And go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say, you can also reach out to us over on Instagram is probably where we hang out the most.
Yeah.
And share some information about goal writing there as well. So be sure to look into Instagram if you're interested in learning more about that.
Absolutely. And Emily mentioned her website is emilymarieot.com, right, Emily?
Correct.
And Sarah, yours is?
sarabot.com.
All right. So for everyone listening, you can find them on Instagram or on their websites. I believe that's probably the easiest way to find them. Any last words or anywhere else you'd like people to find you at?
Nowhere else for you to find us, but I just wanted to thank you for having us on.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure, and I'm sure this is going to help so many occupational therapy practitioners out there that are listening. So thank you for sharing, and you know, you shared a lot today, so I can only imagine what else is in that workshop when people have the opportunity to take that. So thank you again.
Thanks, Jason.
And before I wrap up the show, first of all, thank you so much to Sarah and Emily for coming on the show. But before I wrap this up, I just want to say that things change so much. I remember, I believe it was the second or third episode of the OT Schoolhouse podcast was all about goals. And myself and Abby at the time, who was working with the OT Schoolhouse with me, we did an entire episode about goals. And we talked about SMART goals, and I think we even actually added our little E at the end to make sure that our goals are educationally relevant. But things have just changed so much. Goals are so much more important, and the SMART framework still works, but we need to be careful when we are writing our goals. They do have implications on how we provide services. So make sure that you've written down some notes, get those notes into your computer, wherever they will be safe from this episode, because Emily and Sarah just brought so much knowledge, and not only about school-based OT, but also how goals are different from the clinic setting. I've never worked in the clinic setting, so I was super excited to have them talk about how things are different from the clinic versus the school setting. Again, thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Emily, for coming on and sharing so much about goals. And if you want to learn more about Sarah and Emily and their goal writing course that they have, be sure to head over to emilymarieot.com, where you can learn all about their goal writing course. All right, take care, and I will see you in episode number 107.
Thank you for listening to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. For more ways to help you and your students succeed right now, head on over to otschoolhouse.com. Until next time, class is dismissed.